I'm Marco Werman. This is The World. President Barack Obama really didn't know his father, Barack Obama Sr. He was absent from most of Obama Jr.'s childhood. Still, the father had a profound impact on the son. Sally Jacobs has written a new biography of Obama Sr. It's called The Other Barack, The Bold and Reckless Life of President Obama's Father. To tell his story, she traveled to the far west of Kenya, where Obama Sr. was born.
The village that Obama comes from, there's a real rootedness there that I couldn't have begun to imagine till I was there. It's so palpable. You know, you're driving along this very typical African rutted road, and suddenly there's a big sign, blue and white sign with letters on it, that lists the 8 generations of the past Obamas. And, you know, this history is very present. It's not something obscure. Many Americans couldn't begin to name their great-grandfather, much less their great-great-great. This is there on a sign with the president's name at the bottom, and you bounce up another kilometer, and there you are in a village where there is no electricity. There's certainly cell phones, but no electricity, and many people that can tell you the family history from beginning to end.
In 1959, he did ultimately get a ticket out of Kenya. He became the first African student at the University of Hawaii. That's where he met President Obama's mother, Ann Dunham. How did they get together, and what became of their relationship?
They met, interestingly, in a Russian language class. At the time, Russian was all the vogue. They had added an extra class, and they did meet there. They were apparently very taken with one another from the very beginning. Ann Dunham was then 17 and wrote home to a friend in a high school classmate in Seattle and said she had met Obama, and she said, "I'm in love with the African." Within a number of months, she was pregnant. They left Honolulu fairly quietly and went and had a marriage on a neighboring island.
Now, Barack Obama Sr. had his eyes on Harvard. He did go to Harvard, received an invitation to study economics in 1962. But before he could get his PhD, his world fell apart, and it seems a lot of that had to do with a single administrator at Harvard. What happened? I mean, would you say there was a concerted effort to kick him out of Harvard?
Well, what happened really had to do with women once again. At least that's where the issue began. Obama was dating again. He was dating a Kenyan woman who had left the country illegally. This wasn't related to Obama, but he was lobbying vigorously on her behalf. And INS started to look a little more closely at him. And they, as they're considering his application for an extension of his stay that year, they go to Harvard and say, "Well, what about this fellow Obama, Barack Obama?" And Harvard begins to look at his record, and they find that he's married, maybe twice married, maybe even third marriage, and they get concerned. This is not the kind of person they particularly want in their program. He also had severe financial problems, which was significant. Both were a piece of this. And so Harvard officials consider this, and they decide, according to the INS documents, that they are going to cook something up to ease him out. They wanted him out. The administrator at the international program writes Obama a letter and tells him they don't have enough money for him, and he has to go back to Kenya. This was a heartbreak. This was huge for Obama. It wasn't just being asked to leave. A Harvard degree at the time would have been the cornerstone of his life. When Kenya achieved independence in 1963, there were only 500 Kenyans who had a college degree. These were the men and women who were going to create the new country, and Obama was going to be one of them, in his view, and one of the best of them.
Something you mention here is a kind of sad recurring theme throughout the book, and that is his womanizing, and it seems to get him in a lot of trouble. He goes back to Kenya, marries a third time, this wife, also American, daughter of a Jewish salesman, and yet he keeps on telling all these different stories about his marital status. And, I mean, he's Lua. It's not out of the realm of imagination to have several wives. They accept that. Why can't he be honest, though, about who he's married to?
Obama was a very conflicted character. He came of age at a time when everything changed. He was very rooted in the traditional Luo society, but living in downtown Nairobi, where, you know, the old rules had collapsed. You could go into restaurants you couldn't go before. You could have jobs that were unheard of. There used to be signs that said, "No African or dogs may come in." Now, suddenly, you could go in there. And I think he was caught in a sort of a change of culture and unclear how to behave. I think also he was, despite his sort of arrogant demeanor, a very insecure man, and I think it was hard for him to attach to either his wives or children.
Now, some of the recklessness in the title you can see very clearly later in life, in the final chapter of Barack Obama Sr.'s life in Kenya. There's a lot of drinking, a lot of womanizing that continues. But he's also in trouble because he challenges the political direction of the country as being led by the new president, Jomo Kenyatta. How much was he a principled, outspoken radical, Barack Obama Sr., and how much was it the booze talking?
I think both things are true. Again, a crucial piece of Obama is the moment in which he was born. Obama was deeply passionate about Kenya. That was the greatest love of his life, and he wanted to be a player in it. He had huge dreams for the country. When, after Kenyatta becomes the president, and the country starts adrift to the right, as Obama saw it. Foreign investment is very heavy. Privatization of land continues at an accelerated rate. Obama is very unhappy about this. He wrote a paper in July of 1965, very critical of the economic programs of the country, criticizing even Kenyatta himself for the accumulation of property. He was really in his face, and that was an affront. So that would have put him on the map as a critic of the administration at a time when that was not something you should do.
You know, all the while this is happening, a president-to-be, Barack Obama, is growing up in Hawaii. His father wasn't there for him. Did the father still manage to influence or help shape the character of his son, who is now the president?
Well, I would maintain that, as with any child who has a missing parent, that absence is a profoundly formative factor. You know, in Obama's book Dreams, he writes it quite candidly about his search for identity. Who is he? What is a black man in America? How do you be a man in America? And he obviously wanted to know more about his father and journeys to Africa to try to understand him. You know, he learns that his father was quite different than the paragon that his mother had described to him.
Sally Jacobs, a correspondent for the Boston Globe. Her new book is called The Other Barack, The Bold and Reckless Life of President Obama's Father. Thanks very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Sally Jacobs' book includes an evocative description of a house Obama Sr. lived in during his days at Harvard. That house is, in fact, just down the street from where I live, and Obama Sr.'s brother lived nearby on Perry Street. As one Kenyan student who's quoted in the book recalls, Perry Street was a rite of passage, an initiation. If you were a Kenyan in Boston, you had to go there. We'd do praise names and dance until we dropped. It was a huge amount of fun. And as far as the music, well, one of the biggest draws, apparently, was Barack Obama Sr.'s record collection. He had a lot of Lingala language music from Congo. That country's pop tunes were huge across Africa at the time. And the Kenyans in Boston especially loved the innovative jazz sounds of Congolese Tabule Rochereau.
Ay, kashi bolingo na linga kiyo na monte mamonso mama e. Masamba libota nyanga peba yeba kinde na bosani yoteo Cherie, mokinye kozara kapongo Mwasi wangai wa mote majakie Sanke limbi ozoge langai.
That's what we leave you with today, a little classic from Tabule Rochereau from the Nan and Bill Harris Studios at WGBH in Boston. I'm Marco Werman. Thanks for listening.